Governor Scott Walker today asked Wisconsin lawmakers to approve a 2017-2019 biennial budget. All funds, $76.3 billion. State spending, GPR, $34.5 billion. And if you live in a county, a village, a city, a town, that budget affects you. So I've asked three leaders of local governments to come in and talk about that budget. I want to thank, to my left, Michael Coles, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Towns Association, Kurt Witinski, Assistant Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, and Mark O'Connell, Executive Director of Wisconsin Counties Association. So, gentlemen, you just heard the speech. My first question, let's do round robin. Is it going to help or hurt towns? Michael.
Certainly it's going to help. There's going to be direct positive impacts, and I would say indirect positive impacts. Look at the transportation component. There's money for local roads in the budget. Broadband is a really important piece for us from an economic development standpoint, workforce development standpoint. Those are very direct impacts. A lot of our members rely on rural schools. I mean, our communities are built around rural schools.
Yes.
There's a lot of money in this budget for schools. The sparsity aid for rural schools goes up significantly. Transportation aids goes up significantly. So I think you're seeing a lot of focus on, quite frankly, those rural areas with this budget. So it's very, very, very positive for us.
Kurt, your members include the city of Milwaukee down to some pretty small villages. So is it fair to ask you overall, help or hurt?
Yeah, generally hurt. I mean, excuse me, generally helps.
That's an important correction.
Yeah.
How?
I had it all ready to go. So compared to governor's last couple of budgets, well, he's only had two other budgets, this is definitely more helpful in transportation aids primarily and holding steady on the other government programs where the state sends money to local governments, no cuts. So I'd say overall thumbs up.
Mark?
Overall, definitely helps. The governor, of course, keep in mind, we just saw the kickoff.
I understand.
There's right.
You haven't been into the weeds
left.
Yet, have you?
There's a 2,000-page document we're going to go through actually this evening.
Yes.
But overall, when the governor announces that there are going to be additional aids available for county government in the human service arena, in the area of infrastructure, I mean, so far, helps.
Well, Mark, I want to come back to that because yesterday when the governor spoke to your organization, he outlined, I'm going to try to get this right, go to my notes, $51 million increase in nursing home reimbursements. Mm-hmm. Does that largely go to counties?
A good portion goes to counties, yes.
And $39 million more to eliminate the waiting list of 2,200 children with developmental disabilities. That's
big
a
help.
Waiting list.
Big
These
help.
Are big uppers.
Yeah, they are.
Did
they
you
are.
Expect... These, you called them gifts yesterday. You
well,
said 11 gifts to your members.
The human service arena, I mean, not to get into the weeds too much with our viewers, but we handle the types of programs that maintain the fabric of society. We deal with the human service arena. And if you don't have to engage or utilize any of these programs, your life's probably pretty good. But if you know someone who does need them, you're glad that they're there. Now, for a long time, we've carried out state directives with insufficient funds. What the governor has done is dedicate, now that he has the money, dedicated a fair amount of dollars to the human service arena. So what that does, if we help kids at a younger age, we in essence get a payback, a return on the dollar, because they may not have the same kinds of troubles later. So yeah, these were, child welfare was one of the major requests that we had of the governor, and the governor responded very favorably.
Well, but I want to talk about revenue sharing, because right now, you guys, your local government, get $839 million a year in revenue sharing. Now, that's frozen. Did you expect an upper, Kurt, in that?
No. It doesn't surprise me that it's status quo funding level. That's the same thing we had last budget cycle. When governor first took office in 2011, we had, at least cities and villages, had a $20 million hit. I think counties had a hit also. Mm-hmm. Towns also on shared revenue. The governor's thinking or idea was that Act 10 would make up the difference. I'm not sure that difference was made up entirely. But ever since 2011, we have not had that restoration of that $20 million cut. So we've been at less than what we received in 2010 in shared revenue all through the governor's administration.
And I want to ask all three of you, how do your members use shared revenue? Go ahead.
Well, shared revenue for cities and villages is police, fire, the streets, all the services you see at your local. You know, you walk out the door, you see municipal services, sidewalks, streets, plowing, police, fire, all those basic services.
Is that also true for towns?
I mean, it's pretty much the same as Kurt. You know, when we look at our budget, you're going to have a couple of large areas of expenditures in most towns. Certainly, you get into some of those more urban towns, and everything that Kurt just said is true. In your more rural towns, you're going to have a couple of big expenditures, and those shared revenues are going to go to fund those, and they're going to be transportation and fire and EMS.
Okay. So emergency services, shared revenue impact?
Well, it's actually a difficult question. It's one of the challenges we face in the legislature because you can't really say exactly where a shared revenue dollar goes. We don't write shared revenue on it, and we can see exactly where it's spent. But when we look at overall the budgets, counties spend well in excess of 200 plus million just in the area of youth aids and in our court system. So we get less than that in shared revenue. So you could say that goes to all, it goes to youth aids and the court system. There's a whole host of areas that counties perform state functions for, so you could say it goes there as well. But we're not surprised that there is no increase. That's a difficult one for the legislature because, again, you can't point to some deliverable related to the shared revenue. That's the challenge we faced for a long time.
Right.
If the dollars were put into a different area where you could say it goes to the court system or it goes to EMS directly, from our perspective, it'd be a little easier to lobby.
Right. Legislators could get credit for something.
You know what you're spending money on.
Another unique fact that not many people know is that shared revenue was distributed under a formula up until about 2000, 2001, and that formula sent more dollars to poor communities and less dollars to, you know, wealthier communities. That formula has been shut off and has not been used. And so in the 17 years since then, we've gotten away from the original kind of equalizing parts of shared revenue. And now it's just distributed. Whatever you received the year before, that's what you get the next year.
You know, I would add one point, though. While you can't say exactly where the dollars go, and that's why it's difficult for the legislature and governor to look at any increases in that. If we had substantial cuts in that or elimination of shared revenue, that quite frankly would be disastrous.
Totally.
There would be services that would have to stop.
Right.
So that it's
including
it's
some of these emergency services that you talked about.
Here's what happens with fire and EMS largely in towns. It's happening all over right now. Costs are going up significantly. From 2011 to 2015, EMS on median went up 26%.
26%?
26%, that's the median number. Now, what happens, because shared revenue hasn't gone up, you have levy limits in place, they steal from the biggest pot they have, other than fire and EMS, transportation, to fund fire and EMS. Consequently, we have some communities that can't even hit their cost share to maximize GTA because they've been shifting. So Mark is absolutely right. If shared revenue would go away, decrease, you would see more of that shifting. And I think when you look at that town, they're going to put priority on fire and EMS over transportation. We already know we're, you know, in a little bit of a pickle there. Certainly it's gotten better with this budget.
I want to read one quote from the governor's budget and ask you if it's true in terms of your local governments. Independent studies show our Act 10 reforms have saved schools, local and state governments some $5 billion. I realize most of that savings has been in the school districts, and we don't have anybody here from the schools, although I'm going to Marshfield on February 16th to interview the superintendent. Have your local governments saved big bucks as a result of Act 10? We're now 6 years past Act 10.
So initially, I would say in the first couple of years, yes, definitely there were savings, particularly in the larger communities. I'm talking Kenosha, Racine, you know, Madison, Milwaukee, where there were collective bargaining agreements with, you know, general employees, and the contribution those employees were required to make to their health insurance and to their retirement did result in some cost savings. Now, one big exception, though, to Act 10 was it didn't apply to police and fire.
That's right.
Which are huge components of typical municipal budget.
Major exemption.
Right, right. So, overall, especially as time has gone by, those savings, they don't really matter. Act 10 doesn't matter now for preparing our budgets right now.
Okay.
I would agree. I mean, I think initially there was big savings, and that savings continued. I mean, you're not going to save that same amount every year,
right.
But when we had that reset, there were significant savings. We've not done the mathematical calculation to determine exactly what digit it amounts to, But I think that's a fair statement by the governor.
Mike? We're unique relative to cities, villages, and counties in that very few employees in towns were unionized. So certainly the impact on local government from the town standpoint was muted relative to counties, cities, and villages.
Let's turn to property taxes. Mm-hmm. Your members levy property taxes, and if the governor's done one thing, he has really controlled property taxes mm-hmm. on the median valued home. And his budget, he made clear, is going to continue that. So do you resent the package of controls on levy limits or other fiscal controls on your members that are necessary to meet the governor's promise to control property taxes? Mark.
Well, that's a complex question. First of all, if we're going to look at accountability, the state of Wisconsin would like, generally speaking, would like the federal government to allow the state to run its own show, provide some support, but run its own show. We in the local government would like the same thing. In our state, our tax policy is actually hindering our ability to create economic activity. Let me give you this maybe short 30-second version of this. As locals, we are largely funded by the property tax. That means we care about the value of the property. We really don't care if the business sitting on that property does very well or does very poorly. We just care that they're above bankruptcy, that they still can pay the property tax bill. So we really have no interest, purely financially speaking, whether they do well or not. What we really ought to have is a tax policy that encourages us to want the private sector to do really well. But that would require that we are able to assist them in some way. Now, currently, our tax policies do not permit that. If we wanted to expend dollars to create economic activity because there might be some joint shared benefit with a business doing well, we can't do so. Our hands are tied. We're limited. We're capped. Long term, there is no example in the history of tax policy in democracies or republics around the world, since mankind existed, where a limit, cap, restraint, restriction, freeze, long-term, can succeed. And we in Wisconsin are not going to be the first to somehow break the mold. So we're in this fix right now, but it's long-term, it's really not sustainable. At some point in time, we are going to have to look at seriously how we fund local units of government and whether these restrictions or freezes are sustainable.
Do I hear you saying, to follow up, Mark, that the governor's proposed budget buys some time before this crossroads in the issue of property taxes and local control?
Well,
it's 'cause he said it's good,
yeah.
So does it buy us time in terms of this ultimate decision that you just...
Well, in terms of property taxes funding local government, we are almost out of time. We're not at the kickoff there. We're in the fourth quarter, and here's why. I mean, we've looked at individuals and assessed a value, a wealth to them, based on how much property they've acquired. And an individual had this revenue stream called income, which allowed them to acquire property mm-hmm. and then pay the tax on it. And there was some correlation between wealth and property taxes paid. Well, something happened a few years ago. The first baby boomer retired. So they've lost the revenue stream called income, but we're still measuring their wealth based on how much property they've acquired.
Okay.
So as that continues, and we're getting close now to a good number of people in our state, baby boomers retiring, we really are going to be taxing them out of their homes because we in local government rely on that property tax to fund local government. Really what we ought to be doing, because the property tax long-term is not sustainable as the primary revenue stream for local units of government, given the demographics of our society. We really should have a serious tax discussion, tax policy discussion, about how we're going to fund government in the future.
Okay.
Can I underscore what the point he was just making?
You're up next, Kirk.
Yeah, so property tax levy limits have been in place since 2005, and yes, it is a significant challenge for municipalities to continue to provide the services that their citizens want without having the sufficient revenues to make that happen. And in Wisconsin, like Mark said, we have this very narrow band of revenue options at the local level. If you were in Illinois or Minnesota or out west in other states, Texas, there would be a broad spectrum of revenue options at the local level, from local sales tax, maybe even local income tax. I'm not advocating for those, but I'm just saying there'd be more opportunities, more options at the local level. We don't have that. In Wisconsin, feeding off of what Mark said about the sustainability of the kind of current situation with respect to the property tax, 70% of the statewide property tax levy is paid for by homeowners, residential homeowners.
Yes.
And that's another, just another fact that leads to me to question whether this is, we can continue, is this sustainable? If only one classification of property is paying the property tax, pretty soon it's just going to be called the home tax. So there, all these other classes of property, agriculture, manufacturing, commercial, they're only paying the other 30%. That's much different than in other states, and even different than it was 40 years ago in Wisconsin, where it was more 50-50.
Mm-hmm. Mike, your towns are largely, their budgets are largely driven by property tax, aren't they?
We have, out of the groups represented here, certainly our band of revenue-generating mechanisms is the most narrow. So yeah, property tax, real estate and personal are your primary drivers of revenue. What Mark and Kurt said, they're spot on. We've got an old, tired tool in the property tax that really needs to have a serious look at it. What I'm excited about is that we're having, for the first time since I can remember, a discussion, whether or not it's serious yet or not, we'll find out, about federalism. And if we take federalism back to its original design, limited government in Washington, down to Madison, a little bit more authority, but your local governments were intended to be the innovators, the entrepreneurs, the ones where you took experiments and ran with them, and maybe it worked and maybe it didn't. In order to do that, sometimes you need revenue that currently we don't have because of levy limits. Our ability to be entrepreneurial is limited. And I'm really excited to have that discussion about federalism, because if we really follow it to its true end, what it was designed to do, then we should have some authority to be entrepreneurial. And that's really limited with property tax right now.
The devolution, the debate here is the devolution of power from the feds back to the states and local governments. That's the issue.
Absolutely.
Okay. I want to read another sentence from the governor's budget message. Our budget includes more funding for local governments, that's you guys, to fix roads and bridges and potholes than they've seen in more than a decade and a half. So we have to get to the transportation issues. Now, all of your organizations testified at the Assembly Transportation hearing, Mr. Ripp's eight-hour hearing.
Yes.
But now the governors said this budget includes $76.96 million more for in state aid for local governments to repair their roads, bridges, and so does the additional money in the governor's budget reduce the call that I think all your organizations made at the Assembly Transportation Committee for a long-term funding solution to transportation funding? You guys happy with this additional 76.9 million? Does it, are you marching in place here, Kurt?
Well, that's a, I mean, the way you presented that question is the perfect, that's the perfect issue. I'll answer it this way. We are pleased that the governor recognizes that local governments need more assistance, financial assistance from the state to maintain local roads. And he's correct. This is the most money, at least for cities and villages, and I can't speak for the other local governments, but it's the most we've received as far as an upper, as an increase in, you know, over a dozen years. But we are concerned, and we want to work with the legislature on a long-term solution that so we don't have to come back every 2 years and beg for more dollars from the state, knowing that it's probably not there, and maybe that's other programs that the state is responsible for in the transportation realm are not being adequately funded, which they're not. So we all of our groups are supportive of a long-term solution for the state's transportation needs.
So you'll cash these additional aid checks.
Yes.
But it doesn't address the long-term solution.
Correct.
Mike, at that Assembly Transportation hearing, didn't you say that the average in additional aid to a town would allow the repaving of 1 mile? Correct me if I'm wrong.
No.
Correct me.
Yeah, so the initial budget request from the Secretary's office, which would have been $88 per mile GTA, yes. The governor has almost tripled that, which we're very obviously happy about. The budget will provide about $206 per mile in GTA. With the so I don't know what the 206 does, but with the original budget request from the Secretary, a town that's building what I'll call a 20th century road. Mm-hmm. 2 or 3 inches of blacktop over 6 inches of gravel, certainly not able to handle the weights of the 21st century agriculture industry. That would get them about 0.03 miles of road.
0.03 miles.
Three one-hundredths.
Not a very impressive number.
Certainly not as much as that town would like.
Right.
But again, $206 is more than we've gotten in a very, very long time. I talked to Rick Stottleman, who held my post before me. He'd been around since 76. I won't tell you how old I was in 76, but... I was a lot younger than Rick, and he said that we haven't had a budget that he could remember where the governor had put that kind of money into transportation since he'd been around, that it had been fought for in legislature. So certainly it's a positive first step. Now, during that transportation hearing, I also talked about, I shared an analogy, heart and arteries. We've got a heart that is a state transportation system, and we have an important interconnecting network, the capillaries that connect to those hearts and heart and arteries. And for Wisconsin, towns have about 60,000 miles of those capillaries, which is not, it's funny, that's how many capillaries we have in our human body as well.
Okay.
We have a challenge long term if we fund capillaries and not heart and arteries, or vice versa. So as Kurt said, certainly, this is a great step in the right direction for capillaries, but we have to have a discussion about long-term how we maintain that funding for capillaries and also make sure that we address the heart.
Well, we don't live in a local government bubble, so are we happy that the governor recognized the need to fund infrastructure at the local level? Well, of course we are, but we also understand political reality. The likelihood that we are not going to fund majors, but we are going to fund locals, the legislature, I think they have other ideas. So we realize that. And if we're not going to create, what we really need to do is create a long-term sustainable revenue stream to fund our infrastructure, our hard surface infrastructure, our harbors, our airports, as well as
transit, rail.
We need that. I mean, this is, we have an immediate problem and need, and the governor is putting dollars toward that need, but we also have a long-term, much larger issue. So we understand that. Are we going to be able to cash these checks? I mean, these checks are not going to come in the form that are currently in the budget. That is going to get changed. So we shouldn't get too excited about that. Rather, we should continue to have the conversation about how we're going to fund it long-term.
Well, the additional aid under the governor's budget for transportation aides and your important human services funding, mm-hmm. doesn't it build your bases? So in the future budgets, you're going to either have to find a way to make up this new money in the governor's budget or cut services 2-3 years from now? Aren't you building your base level of programs when you cash those checks from the governor's budget?
Sure. Yeah, you are.
So do you deepen the long-range crisis?
Well, I think you create a much more difficult situation long term, especially if you're going to, if part of whatever you are funding,
right.
human services, transportation, whatever it might be, if you are funding it through, let's say, for example, borrowing, well, that puts you in a more difficult spot tomorrow, because if you're going to maintain whatever you funded yesterday at that level, but you still have to pay, on the credit card, you have a problem, and if the revenue is not sufficient to do both, you have a bit of a problem. That's why we've been arguing for quite some time now that we need to find a long-term sustainable revenue stream for transportation. Now, there's not too many ways to put that. That means new revenue, whether it's registration fees, whether it's gas tax, whether it's indexing, whether it's long-term tolling, whether it is any number of things. We really need to have a serious conversation.
But you heard the governor say it is not time to raise the gas tax.
Well, I also heard Robin Voss say that each branch of government has their responsibilities.
Yes.
Governor's responsibility is to introduce.
We are a co-equal branch of government.
And the legislature takes up their action. So this is going to be a major point of contention between the legislature and the governor. We are we're in the mix, and we have a great interest, and we support a long-term solution to transportation. In the end, I do have some hope that our state leaders are going to come to some kind of resolution to seriously address this issue.
when Joint Finance opens hearings on the budget, if you're called to testify, are you going to ask them to pretty much pass the governor's budget as he just put it in the hands of lawmakers? Or are you going to ask them to change some things? What do you think?
Oh, clearly we're going to ask for some changes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. One change you're going to ask for, Mark?
Let's see. We have to look at all the details. We're looking at that tonight. So there's going to be, I think there's all kinds of things that are funded that I'm not aware of.
Okay.
But we may look in the courts area a bit. I think we'll definitely look at the transportation area.
Yes.
So that we
that sounds like your biggest
long-term
ask.
Sustainable.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
That
is the largest ask.
Okay.
That has the most zeros behind it. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, our ask will be more way into the weeds about levy limit calculations and formulas and other things, other details.
Mike.
For us, and I like Mark, we have to dig into the details of this, but I'm told that this is not in the budget. But we have about 80% of our fire and EMS system in the state of Wisconsin that are, the personnel are volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and towns, by and large, provide, and villages and cities as well, with a few counties, fire and EMS service. We have, because of demographics and a variety of other factors that people will point to, excess training, a lot of hurdles that get in front of people volunteering, that we have a volunteer, I wouldn't call it a crisis, but certainly it's something that we've got to be watching, because otherwise we're going to have a challenge there. Volunteers, we learned during a Ledge Council study committee this summer, save us $383 million annually. So we have an ounce of prevention, pound of cure situation. We'd like to see some tax breaks for firefighters and EMS professionals that are volunteers that provide that assistance to our citizens throughout the state. We would hope that that helps incentivize volunteerism.
Well, page 59 of the budget in brief includes $500 per year for volunteer firefighters, EMTs, and first responders awards.
There were two things that came out of Ledge Council Study Committee. One was a $400 tax credit. That may well be something like that. There was another $1,000 tax credit. So
okay.
I was told that maybe it wasn't in there. Maybe it is.
First, when you get the budget in brief, go to page 59. But I'm
Thank
sorry, you.
You
guys were going to say?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I think the governor deserves a fair amount of credit for putting this budget together. The budget is a very difficult document to put together, and no one will be completely happy with it. But there are some very visionary things in this budget. The talk of a workforce of tomorrow, mm-hmm. understanding and seeing the demographics that are unfolding in this state, preparing the smart young talent for the jobs that we have in this state or want to have in this state, there's some really visionary things there. There's also a provision in the budget that the governor is offering where it removes significant administrative barriers to cities, towns, villages, counties, individually and working together to actually do something together. It's a major provision.
The shared services concept,
Shared services concept.
Right.
And now there's no dollars attached to it, but that will have the result of reducing administrative cost among our local units of government. It won't show up as a headline, but it's a major provision and really quite visionary by the governor.
Kurt, you were going to say?
I was going to say, so the state budget is a policy document, it's a fiscal plan for the state, but it's also obviously a political document. The governor hit a home run, I think, on the politics of the spending programs, his treatment of UW-Madison and the UW system overall, his ideas about...
There's an income tax cut in there of $204
income
million.
Income tax cut, elimination of the state forestry property tax.
Which is $170 million that will not be on our property tax bills anymore. He's going to backfill that. I interrupted you, Kurt.
No, that's all right. That's right. I think you're just adding to my point that it was a well-done political document, and I think it'll bear fruit.
Submitted by a governor who is showing every sign of seeking re-election.
Yes.
Correct?
He sounds like
clearly,
Tommy Thompson.
Clearly
sounds
a re-election.
Sounds like Tommy Thompson.
I want to make sure, that, Steve, that no one goes out and buys a new Cadillac with the no more forestry mill tax on their property tax
bill. I understand.
That is 0.2 of 1 mil.
They won't even notice.
If you notice it, I would be surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Okay,
no.
But he's able to say in his speech, I'm getting state government off of all of our property tax bills.
Well, that's true.
Okay.
And but we'll probably save more money in ink not putting that line on the property tax bill than
individual property taxpayers.
Yes.
So I just complimented the governor on his political nature
acumen.
Of this document.
Yeah.
But
yes.
but one thing I noticed, and we'll dig in the details, but he didn't mention anything in his speech about economic development, grants, programs to you know, benefit, job creation, you know, anything about Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. And for us personally, our biggest tool at the local level is tax incremental financing. So we're looking, that's something we're going to go back and talk to legislators about.
He also didn't mention about the growing controversy over dark stores, which affect the tax base of your members.
That's true.
That was not in there.
No.
Now, he front loads a lot of spending in his proposed 2017-2019 budget. Does he front load so much spending that some of the conservative Republicans are going to be nervous, especially when you look at the out years and projected pretty sizable structural deficit? Do you think that front-loading of spending will give some of these conservatives pause, and they'll dial back some of these, maybe some of these programs that you've just been praising?
Mm-hmm. Undoubtedly.
Absolutely.
Undoubtedly.
You already saw it yesterday when I think it was Majority Leader Fitzgerald that had some concerns about K through 12.
$649 million.
So you're going to have some of those Republicans, especially more conservative ones, that are definitely going to have some concerns about the amount of spending in this budget proposal.
I think leadership in both houses, Speaker Voss was sitting right behind the governor. We commented earlier, he didn't seem particularly enthusiastic about some of the spending. I didn't see him clap very much about K-12 or the university UW system spending.
Right. Like the, instead of the 5% tuition cut in year two, which is a $35 million cost to the UW that he's also going to backfill, Speaker Voss has indicated maybe you should boost grants and aids to the most needy students.
It's political genius, though, the 5% cut. Like Kurt said, this has got a lot of political genius behind it, because if you want to take away that 5% cut, the talking points are, well, the assembly leadership or the Senate leadership want to increase taxes on our students and parents.
Right.
Okay. It's a brilliant political document.
Okay, let's close it this way.
I think there's three areas that we're going to see the legislature take a real, real hard look at. One is going to be the 5% tuition cut. I'm not so sure that that makes it through the legislative process. The K-12 allocation, my guess would be at this early stage, that gets dialed back quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And the savings expected or anticipated through a self-insurance, I'm not so sure that the legislature is enthusiastic about
that.
So those are three areas where I think they're going to have a lot of discussion.
The recommendation to self-insure for health care, does that have any bearing on your members?
It's early to tell. So some of our members participate, fair number, maybe over 100 participate in the local government arm of the state's health insurance plan, and it's not entirely clear to me that the self-insurance that the state's going to go that direction would apply to that local plan, but I suspect there will be some impact at the local level.
It will have an impact, because if we go self-insurance for all state employees, that will likely have the effect that some of the current insurers are no longer in business,
especially in Dane County.
Exactly. And then if it works there, does it get expanded to the locals? And once it does, if we reduce the available the available areas of purchase by local units of government in the marketplace, do we in the end drive up the cost because the competition isn't there? So we're looking at this long term. And I know the governor is too, and the group insurance board is as well, but I think the legislature is going to take a real hard look at this. And I've not heard a lot of enthusiasm from the legislature to go in that direction. At least they're hesitant. One report says we will have savings. Another report says there may be significant cost. I think there's going to be
counties,
it's quite a bet.
Counties haven't taken a position yet on self-insurance?
We're very concerned about it.
Okay.
We did sign on to a letter with several other groups asking the governor and the group insurance board to just take a hard look at this. Slow down. We have some serious concerns.
Has the league taken a position?
We haven't taken a position yet. We're still analyzing.
Towns, Mike?
Same thing. We got to take a look at it.
Okay.
I'll just add to what Mark said. Joint Finance Committee ultimately can veto or approve. Yeah. So the legislature still has a say.
However, if Joint Finance kills it, he's scored it as an upper of $60 million.
Right, that they have to
They're
come
gonna
up
with.
They're going
to have to backfill.
Find the money.
Yeah.
And part of that $60 million is underwriting his $200 per pupil aid to the schools.
Yes.
Right.
So that's
it's a good point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think, if, final question, do you think when legislators, if they're worried about the level of spending, Do you think they'll cut back on the governor's additional to your transportation aides? Are you afraid of that, Mike?
I really am not concerned about the transportation aides being cut writ large. To Mark's point, I don't think there is any budget that funds us to the level that the governor has proposed and allows the cuts to the heart. So that is where there would be a more of a concern, is that we've got to figure out how to get more money to address all of the system.
Okay.
But writ large, I don't think so.
Okay. Kurt, you worried?
I'd have to agree that my sense is that most legislators are supportive of more dollars going to local governments on the transportation side. Having said that, if there will be discussions by leadership and others about, hey, do we give the locals this if majors are going to be cut significantly? Does that make sense? So there'll be very serious discussions.
Mark, the question for you is, are you worried about losing both the governor's recommendations on local transportation aides and some of your human service programs, uppers?
I think the human service programs will have a very favorable audience in the legislature. The need is clearly there. We have some rips in the fabric, and the governor repairs those rips with what he's proposed. On the transportation side, I am concerned about that. I don't see the legislature advancing a plan that isolates and assists one element of the transportation infrastructure at the expense of others. So rather, I think the legislature is more likely to attempt to take a more comprehensive approach. And for lack of any additional dollars of input, that the whatever is in there will have to get spread. Now, I think there will be a fair amount of conversation in the legislature about adding to the dollars input in the system, and therefore we would have a better chance of maintaining whatever the governor has proposed for locals.
Okay, thank you very much. I realize you haven't seen the budget in brief that I have, but your willingness to come right after the speech and offer your impressions, thanks to Mike Coles and Kurt Witinski and Mark O'Connell. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.